we'll be discussing Hanukkah. And we'll be discussing what Hellenism was and what Hellenism wasn't. And we're going to try to avoid the two fatal mistakes that people make. Come, David, come on in. When discussing Hanukkah. When you hear people exploiting Hanukkah to say, well, we reject all of Western culture and we reject everything Greek, that's simplistic and it's untrue. You're sitting in a building now which is based on Greek engineering, Greek mathematics. You're living in democracies that are based on the Greek polis state. Much of our civilization is based on Greek ideas. So the real question is not that we reject everything Greece, but what did we learn from Hanukkah about the filter the world of Yefes, to filter that world. I'm going to try very hard because not only is it simplistic and historically inaccurate, but then you walk away without a real yardstick to know what you do accept and what you don't accept. You just throw away everything Greece. That makes sense when you're hearing the shiur. Then you go into your car and you study math and you participate in democracy. You're basically in the Greek world, so it's schizophrenic because you tell yourself you're rejecting everything that Greece stood for and then you really don't. So what about Greece is different? What was the differences between Athens and Yerushalayim? That's the first fatal mistake people make with Hanukkah. They simplify, and by simplify, it becomes so opaque that it's meaningless. The second mistake people make is that the Greeks are out to get us. It's not really true. Hanukkah was part of a larger cultural exchange between the children of Shem and the children of Yefes. Yefes gave birth to Greece. Shem gave birth to the Jewish people. And, of course, it took place across hundreds of years. And at this point, Hanukkah was part of the flare-up. But Greek philosophy and Greek thinkers realized that they were looking for the larger meaning of life. They started thinking about larger issues of human soul, virtue, knowledge, morality, eternity. And they sensed that somehow the road to these truths, light, was through Yerushalayim. They realized that they had to go south. They had to travel to Yerushalayim to revisit their ancient cousins, the people of Shem, because they knew Yafta Lukim Liyefes Vishkon Baal Leshain. Somehow in the Holim of Shein, there were truths that Yefes required. And not all of it was militant and hostile. So for example, if Hanukkah happened in the year 186, in the year 386, about 200 years before, Alexander the Great, famous legendary meeting, who had conquered all of Persia, came to Yerushalayim to conquer it, and Shimon HaTzadik, the Kohen Gadol, came to greet him. And he got off of his horse and he showed deference at all of his executioners, saying, what do you mean kill this old Jew? And he said, no, this is the old Jew. This is the face that comes to me in my dreams every night before a major victory. And Alexander had major victories and tells me I'm going to win. So I have to show deference. And Shimon HaTzadik actually drafts Alexander the Great's help in defeating the Shomronim who were trying to agitate against the Jews. So this is a meeting that isn't hostile, who isn't confrontational. He sees Alexander as his Hasidic Rebbe. And he helps out. Alexander sees Shimon HaTzadik, Hasidic Rebbe. And then about 100 years before on Hanukkah, Ptolemy II, 3rd century, in Egypt, which is part of the Greek Empire, Ptolemy translates the Bible for the first time into the Septuagint, Targum Shivan. Now, Chazal had very, very negative connotations with Targum Shivan. And we have to understand that Chazal were pinpointing certain dangerous elements. But in the broader perspective, isn't this what Torah is meant to be? Isn't Torah an international document of monotheism and morality that's meant to be spread wide? And Greece was the language that was spoken by scholars. So there's a lot happening. How many people that read the Bible through the Septuagint later became Christians? Now, we're not happy when Jews become Christians, but we are happy when paganists become Christians because they move away from the world of voodoo and cannibalism and savage decapitation. So there's a cultural exchange happening. And every cultural exchange is going to be flare-ups, and every cultural exchange is going to be backwashes, and Hellenism is part of the backwash that threatened parts of Judaism. Again, Hellenism was not a theological threat, it was a cultural threat, which we'll talk to. So you have to really, really bear in. And the problem is, most people who speak about Hellenism and Greek philosophy and this encounter haven't read Greek philosophy, and that's their orientation. So they're taking stabs in the dark by defaulting to just simplistic blanket rejections rather than teasing out ideas with a tweezer. Rav Lichtenstein taught me this. If you have a chance, go on the VBM and read some of Rav Aaron's articles about the Greek-Jewish encounter. There's a beautiful article, Io versus Prometheus. I'll try to quote from it. So every day I'll be discussing a different element. And hopefully you'll walk away after Hanukkah, oh, this is how we differ from Greece, and this is why I'm proud to be a Yid, and this is what we have to really work on to protect. Okay. What was missing from Greece? They spoke of virtue. They spoke of morality. The word philanthropia is a Greek word. But it doesn't mean altruism and charity. Or tzedakah, chesed, compassion, and pity. It means showing favors to your family, to people of social standing. It's like exchanging cigars when your friends come over to show your social status. People who were weak in ancient Greece and Athens were seen as people who were frowned upon by the gods. If God favored you, why would you be weak? Why would you be poor? Why would you be indigent? God's favor the strong. God's favor the mighty. God's favor the people who could fend for themselves. Hesiod, who was a Greek philosopher, said, give to people who can give back to you. Don't give to people who can't. So this notion of protecting the weak and protecting the vulnerable and feeling compassion, charity was completely absent from ancient Greece. It was seen as weak. Again, it was philanthropia, but it was a very different experience. It was to gain social standing. It was transactional. I give you, you give me. I'll give you cigars, you come to my... Not, they didn't really have cigars, but... And I'll give you whatever, some oil when you come to my house. You reciprocate by showing me your latest urn, your Grecian urn or something, when I come to your house. But that element of caring for weak and chesed, and part of the reason it was missing is because their image of God, which is very murky. Remember, there's a real split in Greece. Some of the ancient Greeks are still stuck in the world of mythology, thinking of gods as inhabiting Mount Olympus. Some, like Plato, are trying to abstract larger notions. But it's still, all of them are the concept of good, God and good, and the concept of eternity and the eternal soul. But our vision of Kael Melech Yoshev Akisei Rachamim Mechal Kel Chaim B'chesed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is metape with people who are weak, and we want to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we want to be kind, and we want to be generous, and we want to be selfless, not just to our family, but to people around us, was totally absent. You have no record in Athens of charitable organizations because it wasn't seen as a noble calling. Noble calling was to join the polis state, was to join the Senate, not to deliver your funds to people who are too weak to be favored by the gods. Compare that with the exceptional record of Am Yisrael throughout history. Just think about all the money that has been donated over the last 2 months. Sometimes when I see athletes, they make a big deal because the athlete donated $50,000 to some charity. And it's great. I'm not in any way taking... This isn't a knock against LeBron for giving $50,000 to the local high charity. But you hold up the money he gives with the money that Am Yisrael delivers. I mean, you're looking at the greatest philanthropic project in the history of mankind, the State of Israel. The State of Israel would not have been built. Just walk through any hospital, you see a roster of all the Jews who have contributed from all over the world over the last 100 years to build the state. Again, it's organizational charity. So when you think about Hanukkah, think about this difference. Think about a world in which the strong are favored and the weak are left to fend for themselves. Think about a world in which Hashem isn't seen as having a compassionate face and has an image. And think about the world that Am Yisrael has built. And think about how, to a degree, we also infuse that into the broader Christian world, the broader Western world. Is that Christianity maybe took charity too far, and we'll talk about this some other time. But obviously this world is a world of care and compassion and pity. Now, what is the modern Greece? Because you always have to try to find, because we believe that Greece is still alive. What's the modern incarnation of this false form of philanthropy? Well, sometimes you see celebrities that adopt moral causes. Environmental conservation, animal rights, Palestinian rights, whatever the global moral agendas are. Morality is not politicized. Morality is person to person, human to human, heart to heart, people suffer. Now, of course, there's something noble about worrying about larger moral concerns, but not when it replaces morality. We call that virtue signaling at its worst when it's hypocritical. Even when people really care. How many people who are protesting for animal rights or planetary, who are they at home? Who are they with their wives? Who are they in their communities? How kind do they act? If the answer is yes, I'm a very kind, morally caring and sensitive person. I'm compassionate and merciful. And in addition, not only do I care about my friend and my wife and my child and my neighbor and the poor person down the street, but I also care about whales in Antarctica and planets that I'll never visit, and countries that I can't even identify on a map. Okay, so that's legitimate. But if it replaces morality, then it's Greek. Then it's Greek. Politicized morality is a vestige of ancient Greece. It's a little different feel, but it's running away from actual mercy, compassion, and pity, and rachmanis, and hiding behind larger abstractions of morality. In Greece, the abstractions were to build a stronger state. Today, the abstractions are How can we adopt larger moral agendas? Okay, first, be a mensch. First, bin adam l'chavero. Start at the bottom. You want to build larger models? If they're appropriate, that's fine. There's nothing to apply to our conservation. Nothing wrong with defending people who are weak and anti-bigot and racist agendas. All those are legitimate, but not in place of morality. Okay? So these are the issues to work really hard. Just walk away and say everything Greece and all Western civilization is bunk. That's not what you believe. It's not the way we live. It's not the meaning of the pasuk after the Kim Liefes. It's trying to identify the areas of conflict and sharpen them and magnify them and apply them. You walk away, okay, now that it's Hanukkah, what are the aspects that are uniquely Jewish? How did we defeat Greece? This is not just a political, geopolitical skirmish. The Maharal says that all of them, Arba Malchios, came and they threatened humanity with dangerous religious and moral concepts. And by Am Yisrael standing and opposing and defying, as we always do, because our battles are not with the Incas and the Mayans and the Icelanders, our battles are with major empires that threaten humanity. And by defeating Greece, not only did we protect humanity, but we allowed Greek values to then filter because we purified ancient Greece. We stood there and we made sure that certain values didn't pass through the membrane, didn't pass through the filter, so that Greece could lend humanity science and art and philosophy and mathematics and democracy, because we eliminated all the residue and all the adulterations that could have threatened humanity. That's the secret of Hanukkah. How did we filter so that Greece and other cultures could lend whatever benefits they lent to humanity without all the moral and religious challenges and toxicity that they possessed? Okay, so every day in Meretz Hashem this week, we'll try to identify a different component of the battle between, as I call it, Athens and Yerushalayim. Okay? Have a good day, everyone.